Wersky from the Prometheus Radio Project.
What has been the response lately? Are your phones ringing off the hook with people trying to start low power stations around the country?
Sure, it's been really exciting. We've been hearing from folks, from all over the country. The phone has been it's been very busy. Our emails, we've had a lot of folks who have joined our listservs and our emails and joined Radio Spark, which is our social network site kind of for community radio enthusiasts to meet with one another. And that attendance and interest in that site as well has grown while people are trying to network with each other and share resources and get information. So it's been really exciting and also really inspiring to just hear from people who have great ideas for what they want their station to sound like.
What is the site again?
We developed a site called radiospark.org, and that's a spot where anyone who's interested in community radio can to go to share their resources, share their expertise, if they have services, if they have materials for other groups to use that may help them with the organization of their radio station. It's just a place for people to kind of have like a brain swap and to get more information, along with the other resources that Prometheus provides, like our webinars and other handbooks and guidebooks that we've created.
Can you just tell people what is low power FM and what can it be used for?
Sure. So low power FM stations are 100 watt non-commercial radio stations that are licensed to eligible nonprofits. They're not licensed to individuals. So they can be licensed to schools, government agencies, Native American tribes, for example. And so those are who it can be licensed to. The range of the stations can be anywhere from 3 to 10 miles, depending on the topography of the land or other man-made structures, such as like tall buildings and things like that. You know, the landscape determines a lot of how far your signal strength will go and where your antenna is located. All of those things kind of go into it. So they're really micro stations, but give a community an opportunity to really focus in on, you know, who's listening and what kinds of information that community needs and how they want to use a radio service.
And if you're part of a community group and you don't really know about the technicalities of radio, is this something that's just too difficult to for the average person to work on?
I mean, that's why Prometheus is here, and there's, you know, other partner organizations that have really helped to explain what the technical aspects are. As far as actually, you know, doing radio, it's very easy. I mean, that's why so many other groups have taken to it so well. You know, a lot of groups that have gone on the air, you know, there's 800 stations. There are 800 current LPFMs on the air. And, you know, many of them are run by community groups that didn't have any experience in media making before they got on the air, but had passion and knew that there were needs that their community had that weren't being served by other media outlets. And so they picked it up. And thanks to other tools that have been developed, even, you know, in the last couple years, it's made news gathering and distribution a lot easier. You know, other kinds of music programming, softwares and things like that that can then help people who have not had to, you know, don't have any background in radio be able to really take to it pretty easily.
And can you give folks some of the background of why this started in the first place? I guess in the Federal Communication Commission until the year 2001, I guess, had no regulatory structure for stations under 100 watts.
Right. And Prometheus is, you know, really who led the charge on bringing that to their attention and making it a priority for them to create the radio service. And then, of course, for a number of years, you know, after the first initial window, there was a lot of, you know, there were technical concerns that other groups, you know, lobbied against it and didn't want it to continue. They didn't want the service to continue. But, you know, those studies were proven that low-power FM stations, you know, do not create the kinds of interference that larger broadcasters were worried about. And finally, the Local Community Radio Act was able to be put into place to allow this next wave of stations to go on the air.
And that criticism was really just one group, the National Association of Broadcasters, which put out a fake CD of what the interference supposedly was going to sound like between the tiny low-power stations and the giant full-power stations, and gave that to members of Congress who then did not let the full low-power bill go through initially in 2001, right?
Correct. And so, I mean, that was, that study was proven, those claims were proven to be wrong. There was another study that was presented to Congress in 2003 that validated the FCC's original engineering studies that showed that LPFM wouldn't cause those kinds of interferences. So it was unfounded, and, you know, we were allowed to continue to work on this to make it a reality. I mean, for a decade, every single member of the FCC and both, Republicans and Democrats asked Congress to overturn the restrictions. And so it was really definitely like people wanted this. It was, it wasn't as divisive an issue as some other things that have to go through Congress.
And it wasn't a left-right issue. It wasn't a left-right issue either. I mean, Senator McCain, the Republican from Arizona, had been championing this since the mid-90s.
It's been, both sides have seen the value for allowing communities to have this kind of opportunity, and we're just glad that after so many years of fighting for it, it's coming into fruition this October.
But even before the 2001 Act, Prometheus started as a pirate radio station called Radio Liberty. Why did Radio Liberty go on the air in the first place, and why were what was the need for LPFM in the first place?
Well, it was a radio mutiny, and some of those folks from Radio Mutiny, joined Prometheus, and other folks continued with the pirate radio movement. But the folks who joined Prometheus, really saw this as an opportunity that we could fight to make it legitimate for people to be able to have access to it. I'm sorry, I know the question kind of, I wanted to make sure I got some part of our Radio Mutiny, I'm sorry. Can you rephrase that question?
No, I think you answered it perfectly. Some of the folks from Radio Mutiny did start that way and go into this activist lobbying group, and others kept with the pirate radio at the time. And, I mean, to me, it was a combination of all those things and the court victories, Claudia Wilkin kept the Stephen Dunifer on the air for 18 months legally as a pirate station at one point, and all those things added up to the getting the law passed.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just trying to tell a little bit of the history of why we've come to this day or this time in October when there could be how many more stations could possibly be on the air?
Currently, I mean, there's thousands of frequencies that are available right now all across the country. And obviously, some of them, are out in areas where there aren't communities that could support them. So even though there are thousands of frequencies that are available right now, it's hard to say how many new stations will go on the air, but we definitely expect upwards of at least 1,000 new groups to go on the air in the next wave, possibly even more. It's hard to say. I know that definitely Prometheus has had, over 6,000 individuals who've contacted us that are interested in starting a radio station. We're working very closely with a number of groups and have continued to put our services out there to many others, who are continuing to pursue this as an opportunity. So, we definitely expect at least 1,000 new groups to go on the air.
And there were 800 in the first wave in 2001. Mm-hmm. And are they all still on the air, do you know, or has the program been successful?
Yeah, so, we're actually conducting studies about, the challenges that the first wave of LPFM stations faced. And, there's 800 that are currently on air right now. And, we've seen it, the people who are still moving along and that are definitely have active community participation and engagement are doing really well. And it's, you know, that's the fact of the matter is that for, you know, community radio station to maintain, I mean, you know, this is at your station, it's, you need to have grassroots support of what you're doing and the ability for, you know, your community to have input in order for it to stay relevant and to be relevant for, you know, meeting those needs. So we've definitely seen stations that continue to address that well, continue to be successful.
And in the first wave, I think one of the complaints that some people have aired about LPFM is that church groups were able to just go across the board and put applications and get just stockpile applications. And many of the frequencies are putting out the same kind of message or very similar messages. Is that been addressed at all?
Yes, actually, Prometheus worked very hard for this next wave of stations to encourage the FCC to create stronger point system for new applications. And so, for example, right now, the individual breakdown on the points, like, for example, there's an extra point on your application if you are a two-year established community presence and can prove it. You know, like if your group has been around for 2 years and, you know, is definitely rooted in the community, you get a point. If you pledge to produce at least 8 hours of locally originated programming every day, so that would be an additional point on your application. So right there, that can knock out a lot of the like syndicated broadcasters that were able to get on the air the first during the first wave of LPFM. There's an additional pledge point if you can maintain a publicly accessible studio in the community and have staff at the studio for at least 20 hours a week. That again will can kind of stem the tide of syndicated broadcasters. And so then there's an additional point if you can meet both of that criteria. So it just kind of, it allows, newer broadcasters who are definitely rooted in the community, and it gives them a little bit of a leg up on their application.
There's also an
additional point if the organization has no other broadcast stations. So all of those things combined can, we're hoping will definitely allow this to be a more organically, have it be actually real community radio stations on the air, as opposed to just, you know, a broadcast, you know, a radio station in a closet somewhere that's broadcasting syndicated content 24/7.
And I guess the other issue is been with translator stations. And can you explain that to a lay audience of what the issue is between what a translator station is and what the issue is between translators and LPFM? Translators are kind of like little mini repeater stations.
So if you have, a radio station that's in a valley and you want to get it over the mountain, you'd have like a little repeater kind of hop the signal along. But those repeater stations or translators take up valuable airspace. And, you know, oftentimes what you can then have is a station that's covering a very large area with all of these like mini translators, and it's, you know, those could be opportunities where other community radio stations could flourish. So what was holding things up for a while in this last go round with getting the rules ready for this next wave of radio stations was there were so many pending translator applications that were waiting to be, you know, that people were still waiting to find out if they were going to get the application, if their translator was going to go through, that it was kind of clogging up and the works and not allowing many new opportunities for LPFM stations to be considered in those areas. So the FCC allowed, kind of took a look at how many pending translator applications there were, determined in the top, 100 radio markets what the opportunities would look like for LPFM, and decided that in areas where there was limited spectrum availability, they would limit the number of translator applications that could go through, thus allowing some of that airspace to be allowed for a new LPFM to go on the air there.
Are there limits on if you have a full power or a low power station currently, nonprofit groups, can you apply for another one?
So the organization, well, there is a point for organizations that have no other broadcast stations, but actually, let me see,
so your favorite.
It's a little tricky in there. I might not be able to answer that question for you right at this exact moment.
Yeah, well, if you get a point, then they must be allowed because it's then favored, right?
Yeah, and this part is always kind of a little thorny. So I'd have to check with our policy person. The other, just to make sure, I don't want to give you the wrong wording on that question, actually. So I can either get that back to you and have that.
It's not that important.
I know that there's a sticking point in the rules about that, and I don't want to word it incorrectly here while I'm on the phone with you.
Yeah. Is there any other differences between the first LPFM window?
Sure. So the window that's coming up in October, what makes this one really special is that for the first time, stations are going to be licensed in the top, 150 radio markets in what are more urban areas as opposed to rural areas, which is where a lot of the first LPFMs went on the air. Due to rules that Prometheus helped lobby for at the FCC regarding second adjacent waivers, those will allow stations to kind of get snuck into these tighter spaces in the urban radio dial. So that's what's really exciting about this window, is that for the first time, like, major cities could have an LPFM station, and therefore reaching thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, depending on where they are located in that radio market. So that's really exciting. The listenership is going to increase for these stations. It's going to be a much bigger reach. And the other part of it that's different from the last window is that we see this as the last chance for community radio stations to be licensed and to go on the air. There's very limited dial space left, and this window will really be parsing out the last pieces of real estate there. So that's what's been really crucial about making sure that people were aware of this opportunity and giving them the tools they need to go after it.
Yeah, there was a couple years ago a full power window, and that's probably not going to happen again. And there's not going to be a third LPFM window. And
it's highly, highly unlikely. We anticipate that everyone who's wants in on this is going to get those spaces now. And like I said, there may be spaces that are left, particularly in very, very rural areas. But if there's no one there to broadcast to, that space is not very usable. So, you can have a station in the desert, but if there's no one there to listen to it, it's not going to be useful in that same way. So, but all of the airspace left that is of that has listenership, that has audience, will go during this window.
And radio is probably going to radically change in the next before any other windows could be announced. I mean, with the digital. The way things are moving to everyone having a phone or radio with them at all times, terrestrial FM may not be even existing in the same way in 20 years.
I don't know. I mean, we definitely see that terrestrial radio, given its accessibility, affordability, and ease of use and access, we definitely still see it. I mean, people have been saying that about radio for decades, but it's still maintained because it is such a reliable medium. There are many people who still don't have access to broadband the same way, and access to information that way that radio still can fill a very big information gap and entertainment gap too for those folks, and we still see it as being very viable, moving into the decades ahead, even with all of the new technology upgrades and other pieces that come into play. It's still shown to be an important part of people's lives, and we don't see that changing.
Are there any other common questions that you're hearing over and over again that you'd like to clear up for potential applicants?
Sure. I mean, the most ones revolve around what's on our application checklist. And so I'd encourage folks that if you are interested in getting involved with this opportunity, you can visit PrometheusRadio.org/checklist, and that will kind of give you a walkthrough on everything you need to know about filling out your FCC application and having your group be prepared. It's not just, you know, what the rules are, but kind of tells you why you need to know it and what are the things that you would have to have prepared before, you know, being ready to, like, answer questions that are on the application. So it's a really good tool to use first and foremost. You can also sign up with us, get updates from Prometheus. We'll be happy to talk to you. You can call, you know, get in touch with us at info@PrometheusRadio.org. We'll be happy to help groups as the window approaches in October. It's October 15th through the 29th. That's the only time applications will be accepted at the FCC. So those are the dates that people are really going to want to keep in mind.
And the FCC is having a couple webinars, and you said you were going to have some webinars too?
Yes. The webinars are available at PrometheusRadio.org/webinars. We have many booked through the rest of August and into September. The trainings have been a lot of fun. They're fun to sit in on and really informative. We have folks from all over the country chiming in to talk about either finding a viable transmitter site, how to actually fill out the technical portion of the FCC application, finding and distributing radio programming, how to do fundraising. Actually, I think WGXC is joining us on community assessments strategy. They just came in on this last week. We had a member from WGXC's family come in and talk on one of the webinars. So there's really a whole list of options for people to kind of begin to get their head wrapped around the opportunity and what you need to know.
All right. Anything else that we left out or you want to tell people?
Nope. That's it.
All right. I know you have lots of other calls and lots of work to do now until October.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and definitely keep in touch with Prometheus for more information. We'll be happy to hear from you.
All right, Julia, thanks so much for helping out today.